welcome to Comic Talk Today for Monday, February 18th, 2019. I know you're laughing right now. I know. I hear it. You don't want to know why? Because you don't care when you listen. But look, let me blow the door wide open on this thing. It is not Monday, February the 18th. It is Tuesday, February the 19th. But listen, nobody has to know that, okay? Because chances are, even if I put this out on Monday, February 18th, you probably wouldn't listen to like the 19th or the 20th or maybe even later. So you know what? It's okay. It's fine. I lied in the intro to the show. It's fine. Whatever. Just be glad that I'm back. I'm glad that I'm back. I couldn't record last week at all. Last week was a complete disaster. Complete disaster. I went to the hospital. I thought I had kidney stones. I didn't have kidney stones, but I was in there forever. I got to go in for my first CT scan. That was awesome. I loved it. I want to go back and get another one just for fun. It was awesome. It was awesome. There's a little robot voice that talks to you. It says, breathe in. Hold your breath. Breathe out. It was fantastic. I loved it. And the lady was super nice, and they had this awesome painting on the ceiling. Whatever. You're not here to hear about my talking about freaking hospital visits. I'm fine, by the way. I just had a pulled muscle on my back. But I thought it was kidney stones, because that's, you know where the kidneys are, like, on your back, like, right below your ribs? And that's where it was hurting, both sides. And as soon as I went in, they're like, oh, you have kidney stones. I said, I don't have kidney stones. They're like, no, you have kidney stones. So they did all these tests, and guess what? I didn't have kidney stones. I was right. I should be a doctor. Anyways, I'm not a doctor of biology, but I am a doctor of comics. So this podcast is about comics. Welcome. It's Comic Talk Today. Thank you for joining me. I love doing this podcast. Like I said, I just didn't have time last week. Things were a little hectic, but I am back this week, even if this episode is one day late. Whatever. Get over it. It's fine. This is Top of the Pile. On Top of the Pile, I talk about some of my favorite books that I read last week on New Comic Book Day. And I do them on Mondays because, you know, that gives me time to read them. I'm not one of those people that likes to read comics on the day they come out. I mean, I do sometimes. But usually I don't read them the day they come out. Usually I wait till Friday sometimes. But usually not till like Saturday or Sunday. I usually carve out – matter of fact, this is a little inside baseball. I usually carve out like a 3 or 4 hour time frame on a Saturday or Sunday. And it depends like what's going on with the family and whatever. But That's like my weekly Zen time, you know? Some people like to go do yoga or meditation or whatever. I mean, I do meditation. I don't do yoga, but I do meditation. Some people like to do all that kind of stuff, go to the gym, whatever. I like to read comics. So, I set a time every week, like I said, usually Saturday or Sunday, about 3 or 4 hours, because I'm reading on any given week, we'll just say average 25 books in a week. And, I need time. You know, I mean, like I can read a comic in like 5 minutes, but sometimes you just want to sink your teeth into them. You know, sometimes they hit you hard. You want to think about them for a little bit, or sometimes I want to reread things. I don't usually reread stuff. I know most people don't like to reread comics like immediately. That's probably very few and far between. I think, I don't know. Maybe you like to reread comics. I have this weird thing where once I watch something or read something, I don't like to rewatch it or reread it immediately. Like my wife is notorious for watching Breaking Bad every like 30 seconds, like the whole season in 30 seconds. Not really. I just made that up, but she does watch it like 3 times a year. And I'm like, you just watched it. How could you watch it again? I can't do that. But sometimes there are some comics that come along that I like to reread. Fearscape is one of them. I'll be talking about Fearscape tonight because I think that book's fantastic. But yeah, Fearscape's great. And I don't usually like to reread stuff. But I do read a lot of comics. So, you know, I need some time. And everyone knows when daddy's reading his comics, you don't bother daddy. Okay, if you need something, you send him a text. And then if he can reply, he'll reply. But that's my personal time, you know. Everyone deserves some personal time. Man, this is going totally off the rails already. Is this the Nerdy Legion podcast? What's happening to this podcast? See, I don't record podcasts for a week, and I just start rambling. Now you know how Nick feels. Poor guy. He's a sweet angel, my co-host on the Nerdy Legion. But anyways, everyone knows. Don't bother me. That's daddy's time, you know. And if you don't have, like, your daddy time – or mommy time, or if you don't have kids, like your own personal time, then carve it out, man. It's important. Or lady. It's important. At least like an hour or two just to be by yourself in your thoughts, right? And like not necessarily doing anything, right? Like my personal time is reading comics time. It's one of the things that I enjoy the most in life, aside from spending time with my family and BSing with my buddies. But I just love comics, and I want to make that time. So whatever that is for you, right? If you're listening to a comic podcast, and my assumption is your personal time might include comics of some sort. Maybe you need to carve out an hour or so for bagging and boarding. If you read a lot of physical comics, maybe you got to do that. I fortunately don't do many physical comics anymore. I still do. Probably do like, I don't know, 10 a month or so, maybe. Still do physical, but that's probably not true. It's probably more than that. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Carve out some time, right? Just to be by yourself. You deserve it. You deserve it. Especially if you have, a spouse and children running around the house. Man, it's important to have that time, You need a little time cleanser. Anyways, I just spent 6.5 minutes of this podcast not talking about comics. Well, that's not true. I did talk about comics, but let's talk about some comics. Last week was a really interesting week. There's 7 books that I want to talk about. I think I read 27 books last week, and it was hard to pick like what I wanted to discuss. And I think it's a slightly different week than usual. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Sometimes, there's a week where you just have random weird stuff that pops up. And the books that I'll be talking about on this episode are maybe a little random and weird for the stuff I usually talk about on the podcast. But I always make a concerted effort on top of the pile to not talk about the same books over and over again. Right? Because, I read so many books. These books are coming out every month, sometimes every 2 weeks. One of the books I'll be talking about on this episode will be out every single week. I know. I know. I hate those books. We're going to talk about that. Not right now. But, whatever. Let's talk about some books. Where do I want to start? Let's start with a surprise. Surprise book that I really enjoyed. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised. And that is Livewire number 3 from Valiant Comics. And why am I surprised? I haven't felt very Valiant-y for a year and a half, we'll say. A year and a half. The company was sold off a little over a year ago. I think it's like 13 months ago. And even before that, my interest was starting to wane a little bit. And I think the current batch of books is actually really quite good. Bloodshot Rising Spirit is good. X of Manowar is still pretty good. I really like Livewire. I was really enjoying the Shadow Man, and I was a little sad that that ended, but I understand why. Things don't always work out. But yeah, Shadow Man was great. Livewire. I may have talked about this book on the podcast before. I don't know. It might be a different podcast, but I really enjoyed it. Livewire number 3, written by Vida Ayala, and that may be a reason why. I think Vida is a brilliant, brilliant writer. She's done a lot of books over at Vault, so check those out. Submerged was going on recently. I don't know what's going on with that. If I need to check my list. Did that end? Maybe it ended. Maybe that's why I'm not reading it anymore. Anyways, Vida Ayala is the writer. The art is the creative team of Raul Allen and Patricia Martin. They are a married couple, by the way. Fantastic people. And Scott Koblish with letters by Saida Timofonte. Now, I've wanted a Livewire book for a very long time. Years and years and years. I used to tell Dinesh all the time, "Why are you not doing a Livewire book?" And they're like, "Ah, it's coming, it's coming." And it never came until now. So I'm glad that this new iteration of Valiant is doing a Livewire book. I think the character has deserved it for a very long time. And this book is really interesting. It basically follows the events of the recent Harbinger Wars 2 crossover, which was fine. It was not anywhere near as good as the original Harbinger Wars from, when was that? 2013, 14? 13, I think. 2013. It was the first crossover they did when the company relaunched. And it was mostly between Bloodshot and Harbinger. And this one kind of involved the entire Valiant universe, understandably. And in this ongoing, Amanda Livewire has been dealing with the repercussions of everything that she did in that series. So if you didn't read that, you don't need to. In fact, I probably recommend you start off with just reading Livewire number one. I think Vita Ayala does a really good job at introducing who the character is, what her abilities are, kind of the background story. And in this particular issue, there is a lot of backstory because in this issue, Livewire meets her brother Pan. And as a longtime Valiant fan, I don't remember Livewire having a brother. So my assumption is it's a new character. I could be wrong. If I am, let me know. I mean, I know way too much useless things about Valiant. This may be one of those things that slipped my mind. But we meet her brother Pan, and of course we see a lot of flashbacks between her and her brother, and then her training in the Harbinger Foundation with Toya Harada. By the way, cannot wait for The Life and Death of Toya Harada. I've been waiting for that book for like 3 years now, I think. It's been a long time coming, but I'm glad it's finally coming out. I think it's actually out soon, maybe in the next month or so. Anyways, we get to learn a lot about her, how this world works. So even for a new person to the Valiant Universe, I think the series does a good job at that. And yes, this is issue 3, and so there will be some things that if you haven't read 1 and 2, you may be a little lost. Although I think this one is one of those where it could be picked up by a brand new reader and basically understand what's going on. I think that's probably true. I thought the book's fantastic. A lot of that has to do with the art. I've been following Raul and Patricia for a very long time. They did one of my favorite Valiant books probably ever, Secret Weapons, written by screenwriter Eric Heiser. And I adore that book, and their art is fantastic. And it's the same art style here. They have a very distinct art style. It's not I'm not an art major. You know what I'm saying? I don't know the terminology, but it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And in this issue, I think maybe their art seemed a little bit looser than what I've seen previously. And I don't know what that has to do with. Maybe it was just the mood that I was in when I read it. But either way, the art is really well done. Panel layouts are fantastic. And really what sets this book apart for me was the way that Vita is writing the story, because we're going back and forth between present time and past flashback sequences, and all those scenes are intertwined. So you may be a little confused within the first couple of pages to figure out exactly how these things are interweaving. And the cool thing is that it gets more and more complicated, right? So as you go deeper and deeper into the showdown between Livewire and Pan, the figuring out what time is what can get a little convoluted, but it goes directly with the story, because one of Pan's abilities is kind of the ability to suck the energy out from people's brains. And as he's doing this, they're getting like memory flashbacks, right? And so that's kind of how the story is interweaved. And it's really well done. It was fantastic. This character Pan, I think, had a lot of really great characterization for, you know, a 22-page comic. He wasn't even in all 22 pages, most of them, but not in all of them. And you really get a feel for this guy is, and he seems like a total douche, to be honest. But he does bring up some good points, you know? Livewire is kind of telling him how she's nothing like Harada, how she's doing things to save people and this, that, and the other. And as he shows her flashbacks and memories of other people that partook in these events, kind of Harbinger Wars adjacent, she sees that, you know, even though she was trying to do good, a lot of people got hurt, right? People were losing power, getting stuck in elevators, like they would die because there was like accidents or whatever. Really, really well done. It's a very emotional issue and a really cool insight into Livewire's mind. So I really, really dug it. I think this book is actually just blowing it out of the water. I'm excited for this week. Incursion comes out. Brand new book from Valiant, brand new property also, and it's getting some really, really good early buzz, so can't wait to check that out. But we're talking about Livewire, so if I had to rate this one, I'm going to rate it a 4 out of 5. It's fantastic. God, it's good to read Valiant comics again and just really, really love what I'm reading, right? They've turned the output down quite significantly, but I think it's really working. And I know they got Heather Antos over there now. She's doing editing. She is fantastic. That is an amazing pickup for Valiant. And from what I hear, she's got some great talent coming up. So I'm looking forward to seeing all that stuff. All right. Livewire 3, 4 out of 5. Did I say that? I did. All right. Where do I want to go next? I want to hit real quick Ah, I see what I did there. Hit girl number one. I did not mean to do that. I apologize for the terrible dad joke. I know Ronnie's probably laughing in his chair right now because I did a dad joke without even thinking about it. But yeah, let's talk about Hit Girl. Hit Girl number one from Image Comics. This is Hit Girl season two. I should rephrase that because that is part of the title, Hit Girl season two. And this is written by Kevin Smith. Yes, that Kevin Smith. Cool to see him writing comics again. We have art by Pernille Oram, colors by Sonny Go, and letters by Clem Robbins. Now, some people will read this book and absolutely hate it. And that has nothing to do with Kevin Smith. I think Kevin Smith is just fine as a comic book writer. He's not amazing. He's fine. Kevin Smith has gone through a lot in his life. In particular, you know, over the last couple of years, he had the heart issue. And he's lost a lot of weight now. Whatever, he's back. I guess he quit smoking weed. I don't know. That's what I heard. I don't know if that's true. But he's gone through a lot in his life. And I think some of that maybe had to do with smoking way too much weed and not knowing what he was doing. But it seems like he's back in action. He's cleaning up his movie career. What's he doing now? Mallrats 2? Is that what he's doing? I don't remember. He's doing a sequel to another movie. And he's writing comics. So it's good to see him doing that. And the reason people won't like this is not Kevin Smith or any of the creative team or the fact that it's Hit Girl. Or the fact that this is very different from Hit Girl Season 1, which wasn't called that. That was written by Mark Miller with art by JRJR. The reason people may not like this is that it is a completely silent issue. In fact, I think there are 5 words in this entire comics. And those 5 words are said in the final page. It's just a full page panel, and it's Hit Girl saying something. And I thought it was actually quite interesting. I was reading it, and I was like, I'm very confused right now. Where is the words? Did I get, like, a defective copy? Did Comixology, like, ruin my download on this book? Why are there no words? Because I don't read reviews before I pick up these books, right? I like to talk about these books, and sometimes after I read them and before I do Top of the Pile, if I'm like, do I want to talk about this book or that book, right? Like, I usually try to pick like 5, 6, or 7 books, roughly, right? When I started doing these, I was doing like 10, and it was just way too much. But about 5 or 6 is usually what I try to stick to. And if there's like just way too many, right? If there's like 10 books that I'm just like, I need to talk about these, sometimes I will still do it. Most of the time what I'll do is I'll go and read reviews just to see, like, did I miss something on a book? Is this one maybe better than that because of something that I missed, right? I don't let those reviews influence whether I enjoy the books or not. But sometimes there are people that are smarter than me, right? Everyone's got people that are smarter than them. And if there are smart people writing reviews, I want to read them and kind of see, okay, I'm going to talk about this book instead of that book, right? That's basically why I read reviews. Otherwise, I don't care about reviews. Reviews have zero impact on whether I pick up a book or not. For me. For you, it might be different. And that's totally cool. But for me, there's absolutely no influence. And I went and I read this, and I was like, there's no words in this book. So I had to go and immediately look up an article to see, like, is this a silent issue? And as soon as it said it, I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to go back to read this book. And it's very quick. I mean, you can read this comic in like a minute, right? Because there's no words. But I ended up reading this like 3 or 4 times, partially because it was such a quick read that I felt like, man, I might as well go back and read it. But I thought the story was actually really interesting, and the format of the story is very interesting. Like I said, there's no words in any of this. I mean, there's some sound effects and stuff like that. So before you say, but Martin, there's a letterer. Yes, there's like sound effects. And of course, that last word balloon in that last page. But I was like, huh, okay. I'm digging this. And the story is cool. It's when it starts off, there's basically a school shooting. There's a couple guys in trench coats and masks. They start shooting up the school. And Hit Girl comes in, takes care of them very quickly, and matter of fact, very violently as well, because this is Hit Girl, so she's chopping heads off. And the ultimate showdown between the shooters and her is in the library. And after she knocks one of the guys out and chops his head off, these shelves in the library fall down, and one of the books that falls off one of these shelves is like a sort of fictionalized biography of Hit Girl. And on the cover it says, soon to be a motion picture. And she's like, what the hell? Well, she doesn't say that, but you can see it in her face, right? And that's why I really liked it, because there's so much emotion portrayed because of the fact that you don't have words in this comic. Your sole focus is on the art. And as a result, it is extremely important for the storyteller, the artist, to be able to convey everything that's happening in any given panel extremely visually. And the art style is cartoony, but it works really well for this book, right? Because it's Hit Girl. I mean, it's kind of like watching a kid's show where, like, things get murdered. What was that? There was a cartoon like that, wasn't it? What was it, like, rabbits or mice or something? What am I thinking of? Oh, maybe I'm thinking of that, yeah, that's what it is. It's that Simpsons thing with the cat and the mouse, the play on Tom and Jerry, where there's always, like, things getting blown up and whatever. Kind of like that, right? Where you have a cartoon that should be for kids, but you have this uber violence going on in the background. And that's kind of what this is. And I think the artist does a really good job of conveying all these things and really guiding you through all the steps of the story to get to this final point where Hit Girl gets hit in the head by this book of her fictionalized biography that's going to be turned into a motion picture. And she's like, kind of like, what the hell? Nobody told me that I was going to be made into a movie. So she flies to Hollywood, kills a guy on the plane, by the way, because he's a pedophile, and tries to touch her leg. I'm not going to describe it, but that part was actually kind of funny, the way that it all played out. And she gets to Hollywood, puts on her Hit Girl outfit, and then sitting up top the Hollywood sign, she's something like heads will roll or something like that. I can't remember what the exact line was. I thought it was actually really quite well done. I really enjoy silent issues when they are done really, really well. And they're not easy to do, right? You might think to yourself, because of the fact that there are no words, it's much easier to write because you're writing action. But I would say the opposite is true, that a silent issue would be harder to write because there is no words guiding you through the page. And so it is more up to the reader to determine what the action is about than for the writer to tell the reader what the action is about. And so for that reason, I wanted to talk about this book because I think it's quite interesting. I enjoyed the first series of Hit Girl that Miller was writing. This is not like the first. I'm talking about the one from last year. So far I like this one better, which is weird, right? Because Miller created the character. But I really like the direction of where this is going. I look forward to seeing what Hit Girl does in Hollywood. So, Hit Girl, 4 out of 5. One more time, 4 out of 5. I really like this. I like this book quite a bit. I'm curious to know if anybody picked it up. The other one that I'm curious if anyone picked up is Marvel's Annotated. And I've got it on the list. I'm not going to talk about it because Marvel's is a... How old is that now? 20 years? Maybe more? I want to say it came out like early 2000s, but I could be completely wrong. Matter of fact, I should have written a note for myself to figure out when it was written. Of course, written by Kurt Busiek, one of my all-time favorite writers, Astro City fame, Astro City, sadly no longer being published. They're going to do original graphic novels, but decades, it's been one of my favorite comics. Alex Ross co-wrote the Zero issue. He is the artist for the entire series. And Steve Durrell also did some writing duties on the Zero issue. All the artists by Alex Ross. We got letters by Richard Starkings and John Gashel. I'm not going to talk about Marvels because if you haven't read it, shame on you, you should have read it. If you've never read it, put it on your list. It is one of those like seminal works of comic book fiction that I think is one of those things that should be almost like mandatory reading, right, for any comic fan. If you're not into superhero books, you might not dig it. But I think you will, even if you don't like superhero books, because it's a very different type of storytelling. If you're familiar with Busiek's work, you might understand what I'm talking about. But I do recommend it. Go check it out. I wanted to briefly talk about it because I haven't read this since it came out. I have never done a reread of Marvel's. And I don't know why that is. I mean, there's other similar books to this, right? Maybe kind of Kingdom Come is kind of like this. another Alex Ross illustrated book or painted book. Maybe kind of like this, but I think one of the reasons why it's something that people should be reading is because it's one of those books that is not your typical comic book book, even though it's a superhero comic book, if that makes any sense. There are certain times when stories come along or writers come along, or sometimes just a confluence of the two things, where you really get something special and different that really changes the way that you look at how comic books are made. And I think that's fascinating. So as a result, I wanted to talk about it briefly on here. I don't think they did anything different with the book itself. They're publishing this in five parts, if I'm not mistaken. Four parts. So this is one of four. So it includes issue zero and issue one of Marvel's. And what I liked about this, and I know some of you are interested in how comics work, is the fact that at the end, after the story, you actually have scripts of Kurt Busiek with the corresponding panel that the script is describing. So if you like to know how comics work, how they're created, maybe you want to write a comic of your own, then it's definitely cool to see that kind of thing, because they are extremely detailed panels. And there are different ways that, you know, writers come about and write their scripts. I've seen some very slim writing where the writer basically comes up with the action and the dialogue, but it is up to the penciler or the artist to determine the panel layouts, any additional action, things like that. Not this. It is very detailed. I mean, a guy, you know, brushing his shoulder to get a piece of dust off might take like a page to describe. It's absolutely fantastic. So for that reason alone, I recommend you pick this up. I'm not going to rate this book, but I urge, if you didn't pick it up, if you've never read Marvel's, this may be a cool way to get in on that. So Marvel's Annotated number one from Marvel Comics. It'd be weird if DC Comics put out a book named Marvel's, right? I mean, you have Captain Marvel, so maybe that's not so weird. Another book that that I want to talk about that does this kind of same thing is Fearscape, which I already teased that I was going to be talking about. Fearscape number four from Vault Comics. I think I talked about issue one of this when the series premiered. This is one of my favorite books on the stands right now, hands down. There's a few books that I can say that about. This is one of them. The one I'm going to talk about immediately, well, you know what? Let's not do that. I'm going to talk about the last book that I want to talk about today is another one of my favorite books coming out on the stands right now. And what would be the other one? I mean, Wildstorm, I guess. Esther City's not around anymore. I don't know. There's a few. Oh, Savage Shores. I think that's also a Vault. No, that's an Image comic. Is it an Image? No, that's Vault. See, another Vault book. Go, don't sleep on Vault, folks. You need to be reading Vault comics. They do some really good stuff. Anyways, Fearscape number four. Written by Ryan O'Sullivan. Art by Andrea Moody. Colors by Vladimir Popov, and letters by End World Design. I'm gonna change my name officially to something like, I'm gonna change my driver's license to Comic Talk today. How about that? Anyways, Fearscape number four. Of course, it is very tough to talk about a book when it's almost ending. This is the penultimate issue. Issue five will be the last one. However, let me recommend you put this on your list of things to read. If you don't want to pick this up in single issues, that's fine, don't. But I recommend you see if the trade has been solicited for this and go ahead and pre-order it, because for one, I know for a fact this will read much better and more clearly in a trade format. It is one of those stories where there is a lot of things going on. There's, I don't know about hundreds, but there are tons of different plot threads, and it's not an easy book to read, because this, like Marvel's, is one of those books that really does something different with the way comics are told. And it is fascinating. In this particular issue, they do some comparisons to Ulysses, James Joyce, if you've never read that. I'm not going to recommend you read it, because it is literally like 1,000 pages, and it's just one run-on sentence for 1,000 pages. However, it is one of the great works of literature. I was an English major, so of course I've read it several times. Not since college. I do not want to read that book again unless for some reason my life depends on rereading it. But it is quite interesting and really fascinating, a great piece of literature. If you're a fan of reading, maybe you want to read Ulysses. If you just like read comics, then stick to your comics. All right. The structure of this book is quite interesting. If you're not familiar, let me recap Fearscape real quick. Basically, I mean, I should just make you go listen to Comic Talk Today episode, whatever that was, right? I'm not going to do that to you. I'm not some kind of jerk. Sometimes I am. But I'm not going to do that to you. Fearscape basically is about the Fearscape. Haha, see what I did there? About the Fearscape. Basically, there's a alternate dimension, maybe? It's like a magical realm where all of humanity's fears live. And so there's like muses and fairy creatures and mythological creatures and like demon type creatures. And it's kind of like all the ideas that humanity kind of comes up with kind of live in this world as actual things, right? They're not just imaginative storytelling elements or whatever. They're real beings. And, the people that rule the Fearscape, I don't know about rule is the right thing. They always choose a storyteller to be kind of the hero that helps keep the balance between the Fearscape and our realm. And the current storyteller is Arthur, who's, he's an older man. He's got some health issues, possibly dementia or Alzheimer's as well. And he is chosen kind of as a storyteller for the current generation. And one day this muse goes to find them. He's, of course, not there because he's hospitalized. And his quote-unquote friend slash quote-unquote protege is there. And he kind of, when the muse asks him to come and you know, come to the Fearscape because there's some trouble afoot, he says he's Arthur. And, of course, he's not. He's Henry. Matter of fact, his name is Henry Henry because he is such a piece of crap character. He can't even have a different last name than a first name. And Henry is a piece of crap character. He really is. He is a terrible, terrible person. He is absolutely delusional. He is a lying sack of crap. He is a thief. And as we learn in well, last issue, and obviously in this issue, he is also a murderer and not the nicest person. But for some reason, he can basically lie his way out of anything. He is the ultimate con man, except the con he's running is basically threatening the existence of our realm and this magical fairy realm. Now, that description, as long as it was, does not even begin to describe the amount of craziness that goes on in this book. And I will tell you, it is not an easy read, because this reads like literature. This reads, the closest thing that I can compare this to would be something like Neil Gaiman, right? Like Sandman. Where, I mean, there's some similar elements to that, right? Because in Sandman, you have the dreaming and that whole magical element as well. In some ways, it reads that way. But the difference is, here we have a completely unreliable narrator. And Henry is the narrator throughout the series. He talks a lot because he likes to hear the sound of his voice. Again, he's a piece of crap character. And the more you read into the book, the more you see that this guy's a piece of crap. The book can come off as a little pretentious, but I think that is actually exactly the point, because Henry is beyond pretentious. Also, that I mentioned, he is a horrible human being, but you just can't not read his adventures. I mean, it is fascinating to read this, but there is a lot going on. There is a ton going on, because you also have to learn to differentiate, as the reader, the difference between what is fiction, what is fact, and what is fact in Henry's mind. And sometimes those things are not easy to figure out. And Henry is always talking to the reader. Dear reader this, dear reader that. So again, it can be difficult to read if you're not used to this kind of story. However, if you want to challenge yourself to a really freaking good comic, Fearscape is what you need to be reading. All right, that was my preface to Fearscape. Now, as the book opens, Henry's kind of fleeing this murder scene. The muse that enlisted him to come to the Fearscape to help out with these troubles has been murdered by Henry, but nobody knows that except Henry, because the muse is dead, so of course she can't say. Kind of. We'll get to that later. And he's running from the scene. He's got, you know, muse yellow blood all over his hands, and as he's fleeing, he comes up to the hero with a thousand faces, who is one of the coolest character designs I've ever seen in my life. He is basically like a knight with a shiny cube for a head, and the faces in the cubes are constantly changing. So you see like Tesla and Edison and like Voltaire and like all different kinds of people from throughout history. My assumption is these are all kind of people that have served as storyteller in the Fearscape is my assumption. I could be wrong, but that's kind of the way it seems to me. And he's got this like pinkish, reddish, yellowish flame coming out of his head. Just the coolest character design. I love this character. I love this character. I hope he survives the next issue. We'll see. Anyways, he meets up with Henry, and he's like, where's the Muse? And Henry's like, oh my god, like we got attacked, and she sacrificed her life to save mine, because I'm the storyteller, and I'm super important. And the hero's kind of like, okay, like, that's a little weird, but if you say so, where's the Muse? So, Henry tells him, and he goes to find the Muse. Henry kind of dips out. He goes to the Fearscape, and he wants to talk to the powers that be there. At the Weeping Castle. So the hero goes to find the Muse. He finds the dead body, and Jill is there. Jill is Arthur's daughter, right? The guy that's supposed to be the storyteller, okay? As opposed to Henry. She's there weeping over the Muse, and kind of her and the hero talk, and they're like, you know, we need to tell everybody at the Fearscape. So they go to the Fearscape, to the Weeping Castle. Unfortunately, Henry was there first, so he talks to the First Fear, who's kind of the guy in charge, and he's like, yeah, the hero killed the Muse. And so when the hero shows up, the First Fear doesn't want to hear anything about it. He's like, nope, you're a damn liar. You killed the Muse. Put him in jail. Jill tries to interject and say, like, you know, the hero found her like this. Like, I was there. Henry killed her. And the First Fear is like, I don't know who you are. You need to shut your mouth. And sends her back into the real world, into our world. And First Fear kind of apologizes to Henry, like, oh my god, this, that, and the other. Because, again, Henry's a piece of crap. He basically just got away with murder and has everyone convinced that the good guy is the bad guy. We'll see how that plays out in the next issue. There's some other things that I don't want to spoil without you reading the story, but I teased this earlier, where the Muse died, but you can't kill the Muse, right? So there's already a new Muse. It's a baby that was born, and it's the same Muse, right? Like, the body dies, but the spirit of the Muse moves on to a different physical incarnation. And as soon as the baby sees Henry, she's like, bad. And First Fear's like, oh, she said Baba. And they're like, no, he said that Henry was bad. Anyways, I love this book. The art by Andrea Moody is one of my favorite things ever. I think Andrea Moody is one of those artists that needs to be doing like more mainstream books. I don't know if he doesn't want to or if he just hasn't had the chance to yet, but that is a name that you need to be looking out for, because this guy is absolutely freaking fantastic. Fearscape number 4, if you couldn't guess, is a 5 out of 5. I just love the living crap out of this book. It is so damn good. Again, it's not an easy read. There's a lot going on, but it is absolutely brilliant and beautiful to look at. So, 5 out of 5 on Fearscape number 4. All right, let's do Marvel Corner. Marvel Corner! I got 2 Marvel books that I want to talk about. Oh my god, there's no DC books this week. What happened? I almost talked about, what did I want to talk about? Superman number 8? I decided not to. The more I thought about Superman 8, I decided I didn't like it as much as I did the first time I read it. So, we're not going to be talking about it. Maybe at some point in the future we will. But Savage Sword of Conan number 1, it came out. Jerry Dugan is the writer. We have art by Ron Gearney, or Garney, colors by Richard Isanova, and letters by Travis Lanham. This is a new ongoing. This is part 1 of a part story for this particular book. I know some people are already upset at the oversaturation of Conan. Listen, it's 2 books. All right, technically 3 books, because he's going to be in Savage Avengers. We're not talking about that today. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you can look forward to Wednesday's episode. I'll briefly talk about that, or you can just go online and look it up. But he's only in 2 books. I think part of the worry is that people are concerned that they're going to Wolverine Conan now that they own the franchise. And I get that. Those of you that were around in the 90s may remember the Wolverinization of Wolverine and how much everyone hated Wolverine for the next, I don't know, 10 or 15 years, because Wolverine was literally in every single issue of every single book that Marvel was putting out for years. That's not going to be the case. And here's the difference. There's 2 Conan books. 3, if you want to count Savage Avengers. I'm sure there's more coming. As a matter of fact, I think there's at least 1 more coming, maybe 2 more. Anyways, the point is, if you don't want to read them, don't read them. If you want to pick one and stick to that one, then do that. Same thing with like Batman, right? If you don't like Batman, there's always Detective, or vice versa. Or with Superman, you don't like Superman, go read Action. I know some people like Action better. That's fine. Same thing with Conan. So don't freak out, folks. It's fine. And you know what? Here's the thing. Both books are really freaking good. Really, really good. Conan the Barbarian, I talked about the first issue. I loved it. It was a 5 out of 5. I think it was my pick of the week because, partially, I didn't expect to like it, and I freaking loved it. This one, while not as good as the Jason Aaron Conan, is really freaking good as well. So, Savage Sword of Conan. Here's what I will say before I continue. While I feel like Jason Aaron's Conan is a much better told story, this one is extremely well told. The difference is this actually feels more like a classic Conan book than the Jason Aaron book. And without you reading those, you may not be able to judge, even knowing Jason Aaron's past writing history and Jerry Duggan's past writing history. But if you read both of these books, hit me up on Twitter, at Geekvine, and let me know. I mean, you can email, yale@comictalk.today. But Twitter's the best place. Hit me up and let me know how you feel about that. I feel like this feels like a classic, like, golden age Conan book. It's just rough and visceral and powerful, and, like, Conan does not give two craps in this book. And you can feel that, right? In Conan the Barbarian, he feels a little more reserved in some ways. This one does not feel that way at all. And I love this one. I mean, there's freaking pirates in this one. And snake people. And eyeballs on the face. So, basically, when the book starts off, Conan's been shipwrecked. He's floating on a piece of wood eating sharks. Because, Conan the Barbarian, oh man, it's too bad I don't do episode titles on the top of the pile. Because Conan the Barbarian is basically the Chuck Norris of comic books, okay? So the book opens up with him eating sharks. He gets picked up by this pirate ship and they're gonna sell him into slavery. Conan, of course, manages to get out of this whole ordeal. He's chained to this, I don't wanna assume, but I'm pretty sure a Chinese man. And, he's chained to him. And he's like, I need the key to get out of here. And the guard's like, you don't get a key. Like, who the hell are you? I'm going to kick your ass. And he smacks Conan down. And eventually, Conan decides to stand up to him. Not because he's afraid of him, but because he kind of felt bad that he was going to kick his ass. And I thought that was hilarious, actually. And he does. He kicks him in the balls, knocks the guy out, breaks his hand, and uses a piece of the man's finger bone to pick the lock on his chains. How badass is that? That is badass. That's all I gotta say. So he goes to the captain's cabin. He's asleep. He needs the key so they can get one of the emergency boats out and get the rest of the chains off. And as he gets the key, it turns out that the captain is a serpent man. So there's this whole mythological thing going on here with these pirates, and he fights a serpent guy, kills a serpent man, and grabs this chest that's in the captain's office. They both jump off the ship, get into this boat. As they're going off, they get shipwrecked again because, as it says on there, nature hates Conan, and they end up washing ashore on this island. They open up the chest, and there's nothing but sand in it. But when Conan dumps out the sand, the third eye pops up on his head, and he sees his future of fame and fortune and kingsmanship and sexy, magical women and some evildoer he has to fight. So I guess that's kind of the teaser for how the rest of the story will play out. I thought it was really, really well done. I think Ron Gierney's art really works well with this kind of book. It's much rougher than the art style that we have in Conan the Barbarian, but I think it fits so well here because this is a much rougher Conan than in that book. And I love this one. Another fantastic debut issue for Conan. Savage Sword of Conan is a 5 out of 5. Whew. Man, I just love, I'm gonna have to go back and get some Conan back issues. They're probably already super expensive, but man, this is really, really good. Loving it. Avengers No Road Home, number one. This is a weekly book. Now, before you turn this podcast off because I said it's a weekly book, let me say this. I read, what was that book called? Avengers something. whatever. There was an event last year that was also a weekly book by the same creative team. And I said to myself, I don't read weekly comics. And for some reason, somebody convinced me, I want to say it was Mike Myers. I think Mike convinced me that this book was really freaking good and I should get it. And you know what? I did, and it completely changed my mind on reading weekly comics. So I am in on weekly comics now, and I hope you'll check this one out. It's very interesting. Written by Mark Waid, Al Ewing, and Jim Zub. We have pencils by Paco Medina, inks by Juan Blasco, and letters by Jesus Aburtov, whom I think recently worked over at Aftershock as well. So cool to see him at Marvel. The Avengers team here is weird. It is very weird. It is Hercules, Rocket Raccoon, Hawkeye, Scarlet Witch, Spectrum, Hulk, Vision, and Voyager. And if you don't know Voyager, she was in that event that I cannot remember. No Surrender. That's what it is. Avengers No Surrender. She showed up in that book. And if you read it, you may remember. If not, you may have heard about it. If you have no idea, she is the Grandmaster's daughter. It was revealed in that book. Except it took a while. When she first showed up, she kind of tweaked people's memories so that they remembered her being a founding member of the Avengers. And that whole story was freaking awesome. I loved it. And she's a good guy, right? She might be the Grandmaster's daughter, but she's the one that helped the Avengers get out of the whole debacle. And she's back. She's back, baby. And she is gathering people to take over this evil, to fight this evil. And this team is very interesting. I already mentioned who they are. Blue Marvel shows up in here as well. I don't know if he's going to be like recurring in the book, but he does show up in here as well. And I mean, the team is very cool. It's not like a typical Avengers team, right? And I think for that reason, it's going to work really, really well. I mean, the stuff with Hercules in this book is just freaking fantastic. He is hilarious. Hilarious. And not necessarily because he says funny things, but because he overreacts to everything because he's a Greek god. He overreacts to everything, and it just works so well. The interaction between him and Rocket Raccoon, a character that I don't like at all, worked really well for me. So I was cool with Rocket in this book. The stuff between Hawkeye and Hulk was really cool in here as well. If you may remember in Civil War II, is that right? I think it was Civil War II. Bruce Banner had talked to Hawkeye about killing him because the Hulk was kind of going out of control, and Bruce didn't want to deal with it anymore, so he had Hawkeye kill him. Except, as we know, he's not dead. And that book is fantastic. Go read The Hulk. Vision, Voyager, Scarlet Witch, and Spectrum. All right, so that's the rest of the team. It works really well. I like the way that these characters have some kind of shared history, and they're... You always have, when you have a team book, you always have people breaking off into like groups of two, kind of like a yin-yang kind of thing. And we'll see how the rest of this goes because, you know, some of them could be interesting, right? Like the Scarlet Witch Vision thing could be interesting. We'll see how that whole thing plays out. And kind of they're being led by Voyager. She's recruiting these people because all of a sudden the sun goes out. And it gets dark, and everyone's like, what the hell's happening? And as it turns out, it's not just on Earth, it is all across the universe. So you see, like, the Kree and some other alien races. And Voyager gets this group together. They go to Olympus and see that all the Greek gods are either dead or dying. And they're like, holy crap, like, there's only one person that could do this, and it's Nyx. And Nyx is the goddess of the night in Greek mythology. And of course, as soon as Scarlet Witch says Nyx, Nyx shows up and basically puts her hand through her face. And it's a cool looking panel. I doubt Scarlet Witch is dead, but it's a very cool looking panel. I really enjoyed it. I mean, that's the story, except it's like 40 pages. But I really enjoyed it because it's a lot about seeing the character interactions in here and really just a whole lot of setup for what this event will be. I didn't look up how many parts it is. I'm going to assume like 8 or 10. I think that's what the last one was, what No Surrender was. But yeah, I'm all in on this one. I love this weekly book. Avengers No Road Home, number one, is a 4 out of 5. I really dug it. And when I saw this creative, the roster on this team, I was like, oh man, I don't know about this. But I was sold. I think it works very, very well. So check this one out if you can. That leads me to the last book of this episode. And it is also my pick of the week. Now you're thinking to yourself, Martin, you already rated Fearscape a 5 out of 5. How can you go higher than a 5 out of 5? And you can't. You can't go higher than a 5 out of 5. 5 out of 5 is the tops. I mean, I could use some made-up rating like 7, but I'm not going to do that. But I will get out of the way that this book is also a 5 out of 5. The reason this is my pick of the week, though, is because it is just outright ridiculous fun. It is a 5 out of 5 for a completely different reason than Fearscape, but for this book, I enjoyed more reading, right? Fearscape was more mentally stimulating. This book was just a crap ton of fun. In fact, every single issue of this book is just way too much fun. You know, I often talk about, like, finding that palate cleanser, right? Like, there's some books that aren't meant to be, like, blow you out of the water, right? They're just, like, fun books, and you need to have fun books on your pull list, right? Don't just be like, I need, like, the best, most serious stuff with the best art because I want to get the most out of my money. That's not what you need. What you need is to have at least one book that you know you'll pick up, you really enjoy it, and it's just a fun, quick read, and it gets you in a different mental space. The book for me that's doing that right now is one of my favorite books on the stands. I didn't want to mention this earlier because I didn't want to give out the name, but I know there's at least a couple of you that have tweeted at me when I've talked about this book before. It is from Image Comics. This book is Murder Falcon. So Murder Falcon number 5 is my pick of the week. Murder Falcon is written and illustrated by Daniel Warren Johnson. We have colors by Mike Spicer and letters by Russ Wooten. And this book's a lot of fun. Did I say this book's a lot of fun? This is a very odd book. It is all about music. The main character, Jake, was in a metal band. He's a guitar player. It turns out that in this other dimension, it's like a music thing. It's ruled by this giant tentacle demon thing with one eye. And beings that fight this creature get their power from music. And so, you know, like really good musicians get chosen to have this kind of like avatar in a way, but they're real beings. And Jake's his Murder Falcon. He is a ginormously steroided out dude, who has a falcon face and wears a bandana. And he and Jake, whenever Jake plays, he's shredding his guitar. Murder Falcon's like kicking ass. And this is not just him. There are other people that are doing this as well. And we actually see one of these, a band actually. We see a band at the beginning of this book that is introduced for this issue. The band is Whisperwood. We don't learn that until the end of the issue. But they're like a Swedish death metal band. And I don't know if you've ever heard of that kind of stuff. It's not my kind of music, but the theatrics of it are fascinating. And I recommend you go check out at least like one or two songs just to see what it's about. It probably will not be for most people. I mean, I love rock, and especially like really hard rock. I love screamo and things like that. But even Swedish death metal is a little beyond me. But it's very creative and artistic as well. They're always, you know, wearing face makeup like Kiss. It's basically like if Kiss was a real rock band. Sorry, Kiss fans. Send all your hate mail to yell@comictalk.today. Or at Geekvine, and tag at Kiss. I don't know if that's a thing. Who cares? Anyways, so as the book is opening up, this band Whisperwood is playing. They're jamming out, and every time they're jamming out to their song, there's like freaking creatures coming out, like giant golems, like a giant Groot-looking golem, and like horned moose, deer, reindeer. They're probably reindeer because they're Swedish. Anyways, and these creatures are out like fighting the demon creatures. There's like kind of like dragon looking creatures sent out by Magnus Chaos, who is this villainous one eyed tentacle monster from the other dimension. And it turns out that the whole band dies. You assume the whole band dies. While this is happening, there's some really nice touching moments. As we learn in the first issue of this book, Jake had a girlfriend, and what's her name? Anne. Jake had a girlfriend, Anne, and he ended up kind of dumping her because he got cancer and didn't know how to deal with his cancer. And now they're kind of trying to reconcile. And she's not sure because she was really heartbroken by this whole thing. But Myrna Falcon kind of like takes her out and starts talking to her. He sends her to the world where he's from. I can't remember the name of the damn place. I wish I remembered. Anyways, he shows her the heavy. That's what it's called. He takes her to the heavy, like shows her how this whole thing works and what it's that they do, how they get their powers from music. And he says some really nice things about Jake. And so when she comes back and they come back, Jake knows he has to go and fight some demon creatures, and they're about to go, and he asks Ant to come along, and she kind of doesn't know, but she looks at Murderfalk and is like, okay, I'll come with you. Because that's really what Jake needs, right? Jake needs kind of the reassurance that him pouring his heart out to her actually meant something to her. And it was fantastic. I mean, the emotional roller coaster you get in this book between these like heavy metal shredding moments fighting demons to this guy who suffered from severe cancer, who lost basically everything. He lost his band, he lost his family, he lost his girlfriend, because he just didn't know how to cope with anybody. I think that's something that a lot of people can relate to. Even if you never had cancer, right? Like, there are certain things where you're just like, ugh, I'm just gonna kind of recede inside my shell and not deal with anybody, right? I'll shut everybody out to protect them from my stupidity. Where sometimes that's not what you need, right? You need support. Anyways, I thought that stuff was brilliant. And I'm probably talking about a lot of things that nobody knows what I'm talking about because you might not be reading this book. But let me tell you, you should be reading Murderfalcon. It is the most creative thing I've read in a very long time. It is just all out fun. It takes these insane concepts and just makes them work really, really well. And it's beautiful to look at. I mean, there's some complicated fight scenes, in this series, in particular in this issue. And it was great. Along the way, while this is all thing is happening, Jimmy, who's, Jake's friend, finds his coffin and there's a VHS tape in it. So him and Jake meet up. They watch the tape and there's a creature there who previously fought Magnus Chaos, and he teaches them the guitar tab for the Horn of the Dead, which is the song that they can use to defeat Magnus Chaos. And basically when they play the Horn of the Dead, it summons a zombie army that can help them fight Magnus Chaos. And that you see like the guitar tab on the TV. It was very cool. A lot of this book reminds me of, if you've never seen the Regular Show, I know some of you have because I've talked to you about it. Regular Show is one of the greatest cartoons of the past, 10 years. And it is probably not meant for adults, but it's very obvious that the writing team grew up in roughly the same era that I grew up in. So there's a lot of like 80s and 90s things that are kind of remade into these fantastical stories. Like I remember there's a fight between like a DVD robot and a VHS robot. Anyways, tons of great stuff and a lot of Easter eggs, but my kids love it. And this is one of those things where I can watch with my kids. So go check out Regular Show. I think it's over now. I think the last season was last year, maybe 2 years ago. And there's like 8 or 9 seasons. Well worth it. Go check that out. But yeah, this book's just fun, right? And so after they watch the tape, they're getting ready to, they're going to figure out where, Magnus Chaos is, right? They have coordinates where this battle can take place. So they're going to go there. And as they're heading that way, Helmdar shows up. He's the lead of this Whisperwood band that we saw at the beginning of the issue. And he's riding atop his Groot monster. And he's like, I want to join your band. And that's where the issue ends. I mean, it's freaking brilliant. Probably nothing that I just said made any sense to anybody that's not reading this book. But I cannot recommend Murder Falcon enough. It is one of the most fun I have. Every month when this book comes out, it is just absolute magic to read this book because you're reading it and you're like, how are they getting away with this and how is this working? But it works so well. Murder Falcon pick of the week, 5 out of 5. Go pick up this whole series. And tell Daniel Warren Johnson he's a freaking genius, because he is. And by the way, I was checking out his Twitter, and it was funny. People are actually tweeting at him trying to play the guitar tab for this Horn of the Dead song. Matter of fact, a lot of people are posting links to like their SoundCloud, so you can see what people think this thing sounds like. I hope that maybe when the series is over, Johnson will actually maybe post a video of himself playing guitar, kind of showing what the song sounds like. There's some really cool interpretations, some really, really fantastic songs that were played. Yeah, Murder Falcon, go check it out. It's awesome. All right, that's it. That's it for me. There'll be another episode out today. And by today, I mean tomorrow, but really I mean today, Tuesday, Comic Talk Headlines. That'll be out today with Dustin. I'll be back on Wednesday, which I guess is tomorrow, and I'll be doing the rant. I'll be talking about a couple of things. One of them is Second Coming. I have quite a bit of things to say about Second Coming. If you don't know what that is, you'll find out tomorrow, but it's a book that DC canceled because people hate fun things. Basically, that's what I'm trying to say. Thursday will be Throwback Thursday. I'll be doing Event Comics' Ash. You can blame Chris Parton for that. He, I guess, was looking for issues recently, and I was like, I haven't read that in a long time. So I'll be talking about that series, which was Jimmy Palmiotti and Joe Quesada, two names that you should be very familiar with. And that's kind of how they got their start in comics. So really fascinating story behind Event, and the book is fantastic, so I can't wait to talk about that. Friday, Comic Talk Headlines again, and then I'll be back next Monday for a brand new week. So, without further ado, thanks for listening. Of course, you can find me on Twitter, at Geekvine. You can email the show, yell@comictalk.today. That's it for me. I'll catch you on the next one.